Welcome back to the Life on Target podcast. Nathan Spearing here, your host for a first ever current events themed podcast episode. Not really sure how this is going to go or be received by you, but I'm kind of excited about the parallels and conclusions that can be drawn for Christians and those seeking to live life boldly, to live life on target, from the recent news about Elon Musk's majority, or not majority, but largest stake in Twitter being announced in the news. So he filed forms with the SEC on March 14th that he had taken a almost 10% share in the company Twitter, and immediately prices of stocks increased from, so I just did a quick table, and on March 14th, when the forms were filed with the SEC about his largest stake in Twitter, share prices were $33, and now, or on the 1st of April, they closed out at $49.97. So his stake, if he had, you know, they don't know exactly when Elon Musk purchased his shares and all that, but if we just took the stock price on the 14th of March at $33, and then what happened when it was made public that he took an almost 10% share of the company, that is a $1.2 billion increase in the value of his stake in one day, which is kind of how Elon Musk has climbed his way from an immigrant from South Africa into the U.S. to the world's richest man. Now, you know, he sat down with the Babylon Bee and had some discussions about Christianity, etc. I do not believe he's a Christian. I don't think that there is kind of evidence of that, but obviously he's a smart individual and he is thinking much bigger than most Christians about the future. He is applying his intellectual energy, his understanding of the world in ways that very few people are doing, Christians, non-Christians alike. And I would like to take a few moments today to discuss what would the world be like if Christians were living in life like Elon Musk. What would Elon Musk do? And then filter that through the Christian worldview. And I think the problem is the majority of Christians out there are asleep. That is the tactic that the evil one is employing today against Christians. It's not a persecution. It's not being crushed by the government and, you know, like we've seen in Roman times, hung up on a cross, routinely dissenters of the state being hung out at the city gates to be viewed by all passersby as a warning. That's not happening. Because when that happens, we see historically that the church grows. So why would the evil one use a tactic against the church like that, which would equal explosion of true Christianity? I'm not talking about big evangelical movement, which is more masquerading as a church, but really just country clubs. And you know, my dad always used to say the three B's, you know, buildings, bodies, and bigger budgets. So that's really what drives the church these days, is getting membership up, getting more people in the pews, throwing in a tithe sermon, taking that, and pastors wanting to be celebrity pastors and wanting to have these mega churches, which are impossible to have close relationships with people, etc. I digress. Back to Elon Musk's take. So let's just paint the picture here. Jack Dorsey, the guy that was Twitter's co-founder and was the CEO for a long time and has exited because under his reign of late, Twitter shares have gone down because there's so many things about Twitter that are awful I don't participate on a large scale, but those of you that don't know, I do have a Twitter account, same handle, The Spearing. I think that there is a strategy that the spearing companies will use to use this medium, especially in light of the changes coming for the platform via Elon Musk. I think a really great read is Elon Musk's biography by his name. I think it's Valance is the author. And from that book, I think there's just a number of things to learn about business and about mindset and about strategy for growth. But one of the things in that book that really reminded me, so SpaceX had to test all their rockets on a really remote island because they didn't know how things were going to go. And I know that you've seen those. I'm going to try to maybe find the link of the failures that SpaceX experienced with their boosters and their rockets. And it is catastrophic, the things that happened early on and the crashes and the explosions and the things that, and that's not front and center right now. The sexy rockets taking off, launching these arrays or these numerous satellites for global internet and things, that's what you see. You don't see the struggle up to the top. But one particular story in the book that really made me realize that Elon Musk, you know, for all the love or hate, the way that he does things is the real deal, was they were missing a specific part for, or had a fault on the initial startup of the rocket when they were testing it remotely on this island. And they needed essentially, if I remember correctly, this resistor or this really small part. And they ended up, he ended up having the electronics guy jump in his private jet, fly to, I think, a Radio Shack or an electronics parts store that was open in Indiana, and come back and install it and get the rocket test flight back on track. And the author kind of made the comment that if this was NASA and they had a single part like that fault out, that it would take 6 months to then do that launch. But essentially, they were able to get back on track in 48 hours. And that is indicative of government-run programs versus free market-run programs, which is why centralized government and control of all the different industries never lasts for long, because eventually the people underneath that control realize that although the government has promised to take over everything and make everything right and bring justice and peace and joy to everybody underneath its control, it's impossible, because all the greed and all the corruption that happened at every level makes it impossible for them to do it at a way that makes sense. And everything the government touches and takes over and controls eventually crashes and burns. We need decentralization. We need the free markets. We need creative spirit of people like Elon Musk to drive innovation and change, to take the risk with their own money and make things happen. So back to Twitter. So the co-founder of Twitter has 1/4 the share that Elon Musk has now. So you can think about this, you know, these, and people will react to these tech oligarchs and these gatekeepers and this crushing of free spirit. But the bottom line is another guy who's made way more money than Jack Dorsey can come in way into the company's future, or way into the company's after the company was founded and the company's been run, and in a particular point in time where its shares are genuinely and declining continuously, in a single move, essentially, buy the largest stake in the company owned by anyone. And I tried to find out where the next, you know, Jack Dorsey apparently is the highest individual owner of stock, and the rest is owned by all these different funds. But so the top 10 spots are all owned by these funds. And I'm going to post a link in the show notes, a interview with Michael Saylor about managing these funds and how he has spent multiple billion dollars on Bitcoin. But he essentially said as an owner of a fund, he was looking for ways to invest money. And one of the critiques he made was the quote unquote diversified fund. And he said that a fund will actually not want to have too much of your stock in any one particular company, because that company being, if that company tanks, like, you know, 50% of your investment portfolio or 75% of your investment portfolio was in something like Twitter, and over the last year or two, it's been steadily declining, you're going to be flipping out because you're losing your money. And honestly, that's what it kind of looked like. I bought when I bought into Bitcoin and had a kind of a higher thing. It immediately kind of started dropping, and it didn't bother me because that's a long-term play for me to invest in Bitcoin. But essentially, if one of these companies starts to take off and starts to have these massive gains in value, the actual fund manager will sell portions of that and put it into other stocks to continuously devalue or decentralize your particular stake in it being in one company and to spread it out. And essentially what they're doing is making sure that you don't have catastrophic losses. But what Michael Saylor said in this podcast was actually what they're doing in some of these instances is not keeping the most valuable stocks. And he makes the claim that it's been a relatively small amount of companies that have created the massive gains over time. And a lot of these super wealthy, rich people aren't super rich and wealthy because they had a diversified fund that just crushed it. They had a large stake or an early stake in some of these uber successful companies. And it, you know, so in a sense, all these funds have portions smaller than Elon Musk now. And you see immediately the new CEO appointing Elon Musk to the board. So this outside guy comes in and from making money in real businesses, in rockets, in cars, and you can, you know, compliment or make a critique of the way that he's run those companies and what their actual real value is. You know, I'm not naive to that. But I would say he's got money to make a decision to see the social media landscape and to just buy enough of it to make himself the majority owner, to get a seat on the board. And essentially, you know, that seat on the board had to come from the CEO. If you don't put this guy on the board, you're probably going to get fired. You're probably not going to be in the seat. And, you know, there's some early discussion about whether there's another shakeup coming. And he didn't have any role or hasn't had any role in a long time in quote unquote the tech social media sector. He has these tech companies that, you know, I think, you know, one of the more understated things that he's doing is owning the Starlink network and essentially being in a position to be the internet service provider for the world. So all of the internet traffic that is happening going through his network and these kind of strategic gatekeeper, like being Zuckerberg isn't being gatekeeper in a sense. Being the guy that owns all the internet service providing globally is ultimately this gatekeeper. So he's made these strategic moves in the tech sector. But in a sense, Dorsey is irrelevant now. Elon Musk, he started the company, he co-founded it, he ran it for a while. Elon Musk has all these other industries he's in, and he's just made a move and abruptly taken it over and has now a seat on the board, which will no doubt mean he has a ton of say, bigger than these hedge funds or these different funds that own the next, you know, 10 slots below him, the most influential individual, and essentially increased his value. You know, when it closed out, when I was writing these show notes, it closed out, he had $1.4 billion more value in his shares. And that's not controlled by these gatekeepers. That's the market. That's everybody hearing, oh, Elon Musk's involved, boom, $1.4 billion value creation for himself, let alone, you know, that's if he's got 9% of the company, you know, napkin math right there, we're looking at $14 billion of value creation in 24 hours from the market's feedback. Imagine if as Christians, we could do this. Imagine if we were thinking big enough and were able to create businesses. And that's essentially what I was talking about in my last episode. I had a friend reach out and say, hey, talk a little bit more about what you mean about increasing your income to 10X or 50X. You know, I relayed this kind of strategy with reducing personal overhead, not reducing personal overhead so much that you're eating beans every night, but that really you're everywhere that's frivolous in your life that really isn't bringing a yield, that isn't valuable, isn't enjoying what we see in Ecclesiastes, you know, taking joy in your toil and rejoicing. So having this good practice of good meat, strong drink, and friends and hospitality and community while you're toiling, while you're working, but also setting your sights on something way larger than what Dave Ramsey having a 4 to 6 month emergency fund, paying off your personal home, and essentially figuring out how to make the way that I say it. Dave Ramsey's awesome. He's great for 80% of America that can't be disciplined with their income and needs to make extra principal payments on their primary home so that they can't spend that discretionary money on stupid stuff. It's a great system to take the middle class and the undisciplined person to a point where their earned income can last them longer. They reduce their overhead. They pay off the cheapest debt in their life, which is their primary home. I'm not a fan of that. I'm a fan of using the system. I'm a fan of using debt wisely to produce more value. And that's how I have, I think this month alone, we're going to gross over 30 grand on short-term rental properties. And that is incredible because in a sense, I'm trying to do a land deal right now and the guy wants a pretty good chunk of money. And in a sense, at the beginning of the month, I don't have the money to write that check. And I'm able to tell him, hey man, I got it. It's a little more than I expected in our initial negotiations. I got it to you in less than 30 days. I'm going to write you that check. And that's coming from massive yield that I got from three different rental properties. And I'm able to do strategic land deals at a higher dollar amount than I was ever able to do. And I'm talking with my kids about this. We're praying about it around the dinner table. We're making things happen. We're including them on it. We're letting them into our heart for building this larger vision of a farm and community for people to feast and to rejoice and to make money through agriculture and through these different ventures that we've talked about before. There'll be more of that. But I wanted to point y'all to Psalm 2, and I'll link this in the bio as well. I've been jamming out to Brian Sylvay's rendition of this because it starts out about why the heathen and the nations rage and foolish people plotting in vain, which I think is what we see going on right now. And we don't need to be concerned about that as Christians. We don't. These guys, if you've ever seen that kind of understanding of how small we are in this universe that God created, how insignificant and how short our lifespan, you do not need to be troubled about anything. You should be excited. And then we see in Psalm 2, in verse 7 through 9, the Lord said to me, you are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage and the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. And that's the part of why, and that's kind of, I almost every single day am starting my day with that psalm. And he drops the beat in there a little bit. It gets me amped up. And I'm singing that psalm from my heart before the Lord. And I want you to do this now, is to read over Psalm 2 and to get to verse 8 and ask where God, the Lord said to me, ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage and the ends of the earth your possessions. And believe that God has a heritage and has a possession or parts of the earth to the ends of the earth that he wants you to take possession of. But you are asleep. You are potentially asleep. You're accepting a 3 to 6 month emergency fund and paying off your primary home and taking your W-2 money, and you're asleep and you're watching your Netflix. If this is you, repent. Go to the Lord and say, give me a bigger vision or the appropriate vision for my life. And we, my pastor, I'll maybe try to link this in the show notes too. His sermon this past Sunday was on Jonah. And he says, particularly in this, it's a little bit longer section of his sermon, but he said, when the sailors were in a panic on the sea, Jonah was asleep. I think this is an apt metaphor for how many folks live their lives when they are not listening to what the Lord is saying. This is what Hebrews means when it says in 5:11 that the people had grown dull of hearing, or what Jesus says in Matthew 13, that the people's heart had grown dull, and with their ears they can barely hear, and their eyes have closed. People don't plan on sleeping their way through life. Christians don't plan on being sleepy Christians. But often, we start to build our expectations without inquiring of the Lord. We start to desire those things that the world promises, and along the way, we find ourselves chasing the wrong dreams. But we are too beaten up and too disappointed to chart a different course. So what I want you to do is, in light of Psalm 8, asking the Lord to make the nations your heritage and the ends of the earth your possession, a righteous prayer to take dominion over much more than what you are right now, but seeking the Lord to give you what the vision should be. What particular nation are you taking possession of? What particular area of the earth are you to have dominion over? And believing that He will bring it to pass, and taking a risk, putting your eggs in one basket, if you will, once the Lord has said to you and communicated that vision to you, and not needing a plan B, because the Lord has given you the vision, has set your course, and it is bigger than you could possibly do on your own. When I look back on what has happened so far in my life, everything that we've done has been a result of one single step taken in faith, and then another single step taken in faith in one direction. A long, slow obedience in the same direction is, I got to figure out where that quote was, what that is from, but essentially that is what the Christian life is about. And we have to do that. And not understanding what the yield is going to be, where the highs and lows are going to be, but having that conviction and going for it. That's my prescriptive for you today. How did Elon Musk do it? Read that book about him. Get some insight. He's not a Christian. His goals are not necessarily from the Lord, but seeing how him thinking bigger and applying that, running it through the filter of Scripture with your wife, with your husband, getting on your knees, praying before the Lord, asking for that vision, and then going for it. If this was valuable, share it with one person. Follow me on Twitter. Let's see what we can do here now in light of the things that are coming. I'll link, as I said, the Psalm 2 rendition from Brian Sylvay, that podcast with Michael Saylor about how he strategically looks at building wealth as an institution for a 100-year plan. Also, my pastor's sermon on Jonah, specifically towards the end where he talks about these strategies and being asleep. Go out there, execute the vision.